You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, November 15th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the DNC chair race is on. Hate crimes spike since the election of Donald Trump. Why Vice President-elect Mike Pence is hiding his emails back in Indiana. Facebook and Google demonetize fake news. Sorry, Jimmy Dore. But the problem is not solved. And Rudy Giuliani as Secretary of State? A nightmare, yes. But maybe just a better one than John Bolton. Paul Ryan's first of a couple votes for his speakership happening today. Trump chief advisor still racist and anti-Semitic. Hillary Clinton wins New Hampshire. And Obama sets out on a foreign tour. I guess maybe, I don't know, calm some nerves around the world. Maybe he should stay here and help with us as well. And finally, can Obama make a recess appointment to the Supreme Court? All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. We are still sort of settling in the post-election climate, as it were, in terms of guests that we want to book and whatnot. I mean, we have some, but we had a bunch of guests lined up that aren't quite as relevant in the same way. And we'll get there. We just I personally am still having trouble just sort of thinking clearly and sleeping, for that matter. Not sleeping that much. Good news is that Keith Ellison came out yesterday and announced formally that he is seeking the chairmanship of the DNC, or the chair of the DNC, I guess I should say. He released 40 endorsements of elected officials, state party chairmen, and labor leaders. Let's hear a clip of him on Chris Hayes' program last night, basically making the argument of really why, you know, what kind of message should be out there for the Democrats going forward. Here's Keith Ellison.
See a Trump candidacy and now president-elect trying to use differences of religion and race to divide people, you know, sometimes that can work in the short term, but I believe a message of solidarity and economic opportunity and prosperity is going to win out. And that's what the Democratic Party stands for, and that is where we're going to have our focus. Voter turnout, strengthening the grassroots, and making sure that every working man and woman knows the Democrats are on their side.
I mean, that's a he's been talking a strong populist argument in coming out for this. And, you know, look, he's been a stalwart of the progressive movement for years. He's the chair of the House's, or co-chair of the House's Progressive Caucus. And, you know, this is a guy who I've seen at more grassroots events than probably any elected official in the country. And so I hope he wins. I mean, you're hearing all sorts of like arguments really that are being brought out, ranging from, do we really want a sitting congressperson to be the chair? Now, of course, it would end up probably being a co-chair situation because that's just too much work to put on someone like that. But the fact is that this is about empowering not just the DNC or getting the DNC to do to function in a way that you want it to, but it's also about empowering the co-chair of the Progressive Caucus and giving him access to resources which are going to be used in a way that we're going to be happy with. And then I've also heard complaints that because after Bernie endorsed him and Elizabeth Warren, you know, I took that as sort of like a three-quarters endorsement, a 7-8. Like, he would be great, I think is what she said, as opposed to sort of an active coming out and announcing it. And then Chuck Schumer and Harry Reid came in and endorsed. Some people, comedians, think that that's bad. To have gotten the endorsement of Chuck Schumer, who is clearly falling in line, right? Chuck Schumer is using this endorsement as a way to show his own bona fides. And I don't think that should be successful. I would love to see Chuck Schumer ousted in the Senate of his leadership. I think that's less likely to happen. But nevertheless, people have to act like, or not even act, people have to use the brains that they have and pretend that they're older than 11. I'm not going to be friends with Johnny because Johnny's friends with Peter, who has cooties.
Well, I mean, it is cooties. It's a fantastic point.
Incidentally,
it's been a long process for me to get over Matt's cooties, frankly,
right,
in terms of just office dynamics.
Yeah, and listen, don't email me or IM me about crapping on particular people. I'm not interested in it. You don't like it? Go watch somebody else's show. Honestly. Just garbage. Periscope data is the ultimate tool for fast and flexible visualization. Why run slow queries on old spreadsheet data when Periscope data allows you to run, visualize, and share analysis over billions of data rows in seconds? Answer the big questions instead of running routine SQL tasks again and again. Periscope data is fast, powerful, and effortless to connect. Folks, you know this, but there are three kinds of fast when you talk about Periscope data. Blazing fast query execution, fast workflow, and fast sharing. So you get easy internal collaboration, external sharing. I don't know if you need to show something to your client, I guess. You can embed in your apps. It takes moments. And it's an ease of a trial. That's the thing that I like best about any given product. Can I try it? Get rid of it without it causing me grief. No setup cost or time. Traditional BI tools took over a month to get your ETL configured. With Periscope, you get trailing and delivering insights as soon as you plug in your credentials. And it's easily reversible. Takes one click to disconnect if you decide you don't want to move forward. Plug and play, no uploading, analyze data 150 times faster. Never run the same query twice. Slice the data any way you want. Periscope data is powerful, an intuitive tool that will bring your SQL analysis to the next level. Get a free trial today by going to www.periscopedata.com/majority. That's periscopedata.com/majority. Yeah, I mean, people are sensing a little bit of impatience on my part. Yeah, I'm feeling that. I mean, we got a lot of work to do, and it has to happen quick. And I think there's, you know, there are people out there who are you know, afraid. I've talked to like some union people. People are nervous. People are genuinely nervous as to what this Trump administration is going to bring about. And there's and legitimately so, right? I mean, we have the report from the Southern Poverty Law Center of a huge spike in hate crimes across the country. At least 300 hate crimes reported since the election. And really the disaster that we're looking at is, you could slice it basically two or three ways. Three ways, I would say. One way is this. This right-wing thuggery in the nation. Fascism on the rise internally. The other is an ideological one that we're going to see Paul Ryan attempt to either roll back Medicare or, I mean, a whole host of things, right? We had Mary Jo White has resigned as the SEC chair. I mean, to a large extent, that was expected. But we'll get into who the people are they're talking about for the cabinet. We're not going to know who the cabinet is for a while. And now we're just seeing a bunch of jockeying, right? Where like John Bolton's people float that his name's being considered. Rudy Giuliani's people float that his name's being considered. I mean, the upshot of having Rudy Giuliani at the Secretary of State is that John Bolton's not the Secretary of State. And Rudy Giuliani is not the Attorney General. And remember how Hillary Clinton was going to start a nuclear war on day one? And now we may have John Bolton as the Secretary of State. Just to give you a little sense of that dynamic, of where we're at. But like I say, the other potential disaster is an operational one. We have a president who has no governmental experience whatsoever, who literally walks out of his meeting with the president and shocked about things that I think shock every president. You know, every president apparently, when they first come in and they get their first national security briefing, come out and they sort of like the blood is drained from their face because, of course, the national security guys are just like, you better do what we say or, you know, the country could blow up tomorrow. And it's not a threat. It's more of like a, we know what we're talking about. And I think part of that is to scare those people. But Trump seemed to come out of that that first meeting with Obama just sort of surprised, like had no idea the government did all these things. Had no, I thought they were just there to give work, you know, building permits after you pay the money, after you pay some politician money. Had no idea about all the different things like with food and water and.
Utterly bizarre.
Crazy.
It doesn't make any sense. I thought Department of the Interior was what Melania does to the department.
And now I think Michael spoke yesterday about how he's getting tutored by Obama. And I have some comments on that. I mean, I think there could be some value to that. I don't know. This is going to be the but the point being, I don't want to get off track here, is that operationally you have a guy who has no idea what's going on in government, whose chief advisor is a guy who has never been in government, and then whose chief of staff is a guy who has never been in government. Head of the Wisconsin National Republican Party, I should say, and the RNC chair. But these are people who need to bone up on what departments do in the government. There's not one person in it. And I don't know if there's ever been an example of that. I mean, I'm sure there has been. But I think you probably have to go back to like, well, we're just farmers. And, you know, so of course we have no involvement in government.
We're humble men of the soil, mafiosos, sociopaths, white supremacists, and corrupt business people humbling offering our services to save this great country.
So I tried to go out last night to a function, and all I could do was just sit on my phone and just go like, God damn it, Rudy Giuliani, are you kidding me?
That is quite literally what was
Yes. Like, I, you know, it's like I try and go out and do something, and it's like, no, that's not going to work. So now, like, I've just taken to, like, I can watch, and I can actually, like, watch something. I'm very particular with what I watch. So this is good that this is around. Because when I got home last night, I did watch some comedy, and that was helpful. CISO, spelled S-E-E-S-O, is the new ad-free streaming service bringing you hilarious original series, hand-picked classics, weeks of stand-up specials, and more. You can also see every episode of Saturday Night Live ever, including new episodes the day after they air. The Tonight Show, Late Night with Seth Meyers, the day after they air. And they have classics like 30 Rock, Parks and Recreation, and even Saved by the Bell with Screech. I never watched it. I know people did. That was your first crush, Kelly? I don't even think you should tell
Not
people.
Not Screech.
Oh.
Yeah, Zach Morris.
I have no idea.
I don't know. I was like 8 or something like that. I don't know, whatever.
But here's what I watched last night. And I hadn't seen this in probably 15, no, not 15 years, probably 10 years. Right when it came out, I saw it first. They have the original Office with Ricky Gervais. Now, Ricky Gervais has sort of become oppressive a little bit. But that show was amazing. They have the entire Monty Python catalog, the IT Crowd, and Steve Coogan as Alan Partridge, which is an also awesome show. So last night, like I say, I watched The Office, and that was helpful. And then I cried. Right now, my listeners can try CISO for free for 2 months when you use the promo code MAJORITY at checkout. Shows you can't get anywhere else. Just go to CISO, CISO.com right now to sign up for 2 months free with the promo code MAJORITY. CISO is the only place that offers every episode ever made. 40 years plus of Saturday Night Live. It's worth it for that. I mean, you want to cut the cord, man. That's CISO.com, promo code MAJORITY. They got a bunch of shows that they do that are originals, too. Hidden Camera with Jonah Ray. Harmon Quest. I think that's one for you, Matt. Take My Wife. Two married women comics created by Carmen Esposito and Rhea Butcher.
They have one called Bajillion Dollar Properties that I wanted to see, too.
And that's a Reno 911 guys. Bajillion Properties. All right, so check it out. CISO.com right now. Sign up for 2 months free with the promo code MAJORITY at checkout. Let's just go through a couple of these final Trump things from his interview with Leslie Stahl as they begin to sort of make this guy. I mean, here's the question that I have. You know, what makes more sense? On one hand, you want to gum up the works as much as possible. And it seems to me that the strategy that a Sanders and Warren are taking, where they say, we'll be with him on stuff that we like and stuff that we think is horrible, we won't. Because the stuff that he likes, supposedly, would theoretically create some type of cleave between himself and the Republican, the conservative, the conservative Republicans. Like, you know, they're going to, and right now, look, you can't, you don't know. you read stuff like a transition memo says they're going to, you know, renegotiate NAFTA on day one. Who knows?
For lower standards? I mean, that was another thing that no one ever was clear about during the campaign. If you took his rhetoric seriously, he could mean America needs to catch up with degrading domestic standards in these agreements. That was never clear.
The guy argued that our wages were too high.
Exactly. Right.
So you just don't know at this point. I saw a report today saying, like, the deficit would explode if the infrastructure plan and the tax cuts go through. Now, look, I have no doubt they're going to try and cut taxes. I don't necessarily have a problem with the deficit expanding, depending on what we spend it on. I would rather do it rather on spending rather than cutting taxes. But theoretically, all right, the Freedom Caucus, this is what they've been railing about. So people should just note that for the hypocrisy that we'll hear in the future. But the question becomes, like, do you try and gum up the works by having them, by having the Republican Party establishment at odds with Trump in an operational standpoint? You know, who knows? With a guy like Trump, you know, six sit-downs with Barack Obama, and maybe Donald Trump's just coming out like, I think he should just keep doing it.
You know, sort of like, you know, what can I say? Cool like a black guy, smart like an Asian, funny like a Jew. I mean, great guy. I mean, look, so good at the job.
I'm totally, totally convinced he's American now. Totally convinced.
No, I'll tell you what. I don't even care if he was born in, what was it, Tanzania? Great people there.
I mean, who knows? Right? Like, the guy's still in a state of shock. I don't know. He's probably the only person I know in the country who's probably more of a state of shock than me.
That was the, there was a piece, I think, in Concourse, and it was like, if it's any consolation, Donald Trump is not enjoying this any more than you are. He wanted the opposite. There's no question. Win popular, lose electoral college, and go around the country being like, I'm the most popular politician in the world. Yeah. They're stolen from me.
Yeah. In fact, that's an interesting theory. Let's hear. Here he is with Leslie Stahl, you know, talking about that he got sort of the worst case scenario. Less votes, but actually won the presidency and has to do the job now. Here is Leslie Stahl with Donald Trump.
Running around saying that the system is rigged. The whole thing was rigged. You tweeted once that the Electoral College is a disaster for democracy.
I do.
So do you still think it's rigged?
Well, I think the Electoral College... Look, I won with the Electoral College.
Exactly. But do you think it's rigged?
Yeah, some of the election locations are. Some of the system is.
Even though you won, you're saying it.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to change my mind just because I won. But I would rather see it where you went with simple votes. You know, you get 100 million votes and somebody else gets 90 million votes and you win. There's a reason for
pause it for 1 second. I love the fact that he doesn't even know how many people voted in this election. Like, not even close. Not even remotely close. You know, I would love it if there was, out of the 190 million votes that Hillary... He doesn't even know. This is how disconnected he is. He doesn't even know. I'm not saying you have to know, like, there was 129.3478 votes with 273,465 extant. And then the provisional. No, I'm just saying, like, generally, like, 130 million votes. 120 million votes, somewhere around there. But he thinks, he just says, go ahead. I know I'm nitpicking.
Well, you know,
but
you get 100 million votes and somebody else gets 90 million votes and you win. There's a reason for doing this because it brings all the states into play, Electoral College, and there's something very good about that. But this is a different system, but I respect it. I do respect the system.
What about fake?
Mm-hmm. She really, really held him to the fire. Wait, you still think it's rigged, but you think it's rigged against Hillary? Would have been the question to ask. You know, look, here's the reality. And keep an eye on, well, on all the networks. But I'm curious as to what's going to happen in MSNBC. I mean, look, as nervous as a lot of people are walking around about Donald Trump, the media is probably a little bit nervous. And certainly, would anybody put it past Donald Trump to use the FCC to punish his critics in the media? I mean, these are not the heads of these corporations did not get there because they're brave souls.
You clearly haven't read Ayn Rand.
CNN made $1 billion off of Trump. They're all making money off of Trump. So you're not, I just don't think you're going to see really anybody questioning this guy in any meaningful manner. But getting back to that other disaster, operationally, you have all these people who don't know anything about, no experience in government. None. Like, they don't even know, you know, here you have the president who's not even aware how many people voted in this election. And not just, I'm talking within like 5 or 10 million. He's off almost by double. Do you think Bannon knows, like, I mean, that I feel like these people would all just get lost, even just like on the hill, like literally like, okay, here's Congress.
All right, here's what we need, okay? We need some girls in the office for him to harass. Steve's got a cross burning that'll be out of sight of the cameras in the front lawn. And then let's hand over the Park Service to the freaking Koch brothers. Let's get going. That's the game plan.
That's basically what the game plan is, right? I mean, here's the big question, and I've been thinking about, you know, I'm a little bit all over the place today because I'm still trying to sort of get my bearing. But
dude, last night was actually scary for me. You that rattled?
Oh,
it was disturbing. But it's understandable.
I'm just like obsessed with trying to sort of like figure out what people are going to be doing, and you know, one thing I think that there are people who are pushing right now is getting President Obama to make a recess appointment of Merrick Garland, or frankly, I think it should be someone else at this point, to the Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court itself has ruled in the past on the question of recess appointments and greatly limited the president's ability to do so by narrowing the definition of what constitutes a recess. The case was National Labor Relations Board versus Noel Canning. And this was back in 2014. There are four elements to this case, or I should say to the ruling. One was, and this favors the president, the court ruled, and this is according to Lyle Denniston at SCOTUS Blog. The court ruled that the recess appointment power applies when the Senate leaves town for a break in the middle of an annual sitting or a break at the end of each annual session. And we're not just at the end of a session, annual one. We're actually in between two actual Senates, right? Second, on the president's side, the decision declared that the president during a recess can fill a vacancy even if the opening occurred well before the recess begins. Third, on the Senate side, the ruling made it clear that it has to last more than 3 days. Now, that's the rub, is that what McConnell has been doing is holding the Senate in session. And fourth, the decision left it largely up to the Senate to decide when it does take a recess, allowing it to avoid the formality of a recess by taking some legislative action, regardless of how minor or inconsequential it is. So it's really, it's unclear that there's any legal authority for the president to do this. Nevertheless, it seems to me not an hard argument to make to the American public. Well, of course there has to be a recess. Because you can't have 120 senators. You have 100 senators. And so people have to step down, and then new senators are sworn in. And I think you just make the appointment. And at the very least, what happens if it goes to the Supreme Court? 4-4. I don't know who adjudicates this. I say you tie it up and gum up the works. And I think you're going to start seeing maybe some people, some groups calling for this. I don't know why you wouldn't do it anyways. I mean, if you're... would Obama do this? Highly unlikely, seems to me. Does that mean that it's not worth pushing? I think it's a good idea to push it. But we'll see. I mean, ultimately the question is going to be, do the Democrats attempt to obstruct like the Republicans did? Now, there's only so much you can do. They don't have a supermajority. You can attempt a filibuster. You could force them to nuke the filibuster. And I think that's probably a good idea. Because there's a lot of things they don't want to take ownership of. And I think the sooner you do it, the better. But something like this court thing seems to me one of the few opportunities you have to sort of push it. Here is Trump on the question of Roe v. Wade, and none of this is surprising to me in any fashion. I think it's quite possible that by the, I think it's quite likely at this point that by the time my 11-year-old daughter graduates college, if she goes to college, you have 10 to 15 states in the country where abortion are legal. And that seems to be Donald Trump's agenda here.
Appoint justices who were against abortion rights. Will you appoint, are you looking to appoint a justice who wants to overturn Roe v. Wade?
So here's what's going to happen. I'm pro-life. The judges will be pro-life. They'll be.
But what about overturning
this? Well, there are a couple
law.
Of things. They'll be pro-life. They'll be in terms of the whole gun situation. We know the Second Amendment, and everybody's talking about the Second Amendment, and they're trying to dice it up and change it. They're going to be very pro-Second Amendment. But having to do with abortion, if it ever were overturned, it would go back to the states. So
yeah,
it would go back to the states.
Some women
states.
Won't be able to get an abortion.
No, it'll go back to the states.
By state? No, some...
Yeah. Well, they'll have to go to another state.
No, that's okay.
Well, we'll see what happens. It's got a long way to go, just so you understand. That has a long, long way to go.
Are you...
I don't want to take full responsibility for what I'm going to put into motion. Let me put it that way. So, in other words, if you are a woman living in poverty in one of the Midwestern states that will, I don't know, Kansas or Texas or wherever it is. You'll just have to, I guess, buy a plane ticket or drive 3 or 4 days, 5 days, or, I don't know, take time off from work. I mean, that's the plan, right? That's the game plan. Or you're also, the flip side of that is, of course, you're forcing people, women, to carry to term children for whom there'll be dramatically reduced services. Like, I don't know, it's possible we won't have S-CHIP at that point. I'm not sure. I mean, we'll see. They have a big agenda. It's going to take them a lot of time to cut back all of these services in, you know, in a cohesive way. I mean, this is the situation that we're looking at now. I mean, the upshot is that we have people who are ascendant on the left, at least, and are getting more attention. Bernie Sanders, which I think was inevitable, he was going to get this type of attention, but even more so now because there is no real nominal head of the Democratic Party. I mean, right? I mean, it's Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren who I think people perceive as at least the spiritual leaders of the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders is not even a Democrat.
How though?
No, I mean, good.
I'll lead it. I won't join it. Suck it.
You know what? That's the best way to join something like that. Here is here's Bernie Sanders on The View on Monday. I know, it's such
That's
a
just
weird...
kind of great in and of itself.
Yes. And who is the woman? Is that the local conservative sitting to his left?
I have no idea.
It's just because she has that look on her face, like, what is he saying? But here's Bernie Sanders.
I hope very much, you know, Donald Trump is nobody's fool. And during the campaign, he talks about climate change being a hoax. Yeah. You know what? Climate change is not a hoax. It is a threat to this entire planet. He better start listening to the scientific communities and not just the coal companies.
And if he doesn't?
If he doesn't, you're not going to have much of a planet left for your grandchildren.
I know that. I know that. We're worried a lot about that.
And I think, you know, you talk about people in the streets. I think when millions of people, led by the young people, who want to transform this country, say, sorry, Mr. Trump, I want this planet to be healthy and habitable for my children and my grandchildren, and that is more important than the short-term profits of the oil industry. I think we can stop them in that area.
I can't believe there's one person who's not clapping on there. She's
what an asshole! What a Bernie bro.
I like how they also have to put that thing like the political view. Just so you know, this is the time for you at home. May want to turn the channel. Because we're going to talk about something. It's amazing. You know, at the place that I sometimes go get iced coffee at and a banana in the morning, they play that Kelly Ripa show.
Uh-huh.
What show is that? Kelly? I don't know what it is. But they have like a series of guest hosts. What show is it, Kelly?
Well, it used to be Kelly and Regis, then it was Kelly and Michael, and then there was this whole crazy.
So what is now Kelly and question mark?
I think it's just Kelly.
Okay, so Kelly, and it feels like you watch that. It feels like the Hunger Games, like they're just like like the day after the like nothing's happened. Today they had the Today Show on, and Matt Lauer was doing the same like thing. I don't know, some dumb segment.
Well, Lauer.
Do people remember Lauer? Matt
Lauer has to personally answer for
no
the
kidding.
Role. Yeah, I mean that whole forum that he did is definitely at least a footnote that people should read. Not even a footnote; it's a chapter of this campaign, arguably.
Here's a video. As we talk about the Trump violence, this video seems really strange to me, but it's also pretty disturbing. I'm not quite clear what's going on here. I mean, it's pretty obvious what's going on, but it's also strange in some way. Hold on, pause it. This is, so, you know, I don't know what's going on here. And well, let's watch the video and we can talk about why it just seems a little bit weird to me. But this is an anti-Trump protest in the Ohio State University Student Union. There's a guy who is on a bullhorn. And he gets tackled from behind. He's standing on stairs, and he gets tackled from behind. And the only reason why I'm suspicious of this is we've got it loaded up on the TV, and I guess it's just I used to be a TV director of sorts, and in fact, I was the director of a fake reality show. And I would never put the camera this way, where I'm shooting the speaker and give him all this room behind him, but not see the audience that he's speaking to. Because I would be tipping that there's somebody coming from behind. That's the only weird thing about this to me. But nevertheless, here it is. The guy's speaking and somebody comes running down the steps and slams him down. Now, he slams him hard. Here it is.
You don't love to compromise.
Idiot! Hey, old boy!
I don't know. I honestly don't know what to make out of it, but it's,
it'd be nice to see the raw footage to see if maybe the guy with the camera heard him yelling before and like what was immediately before that shot. But
it is weird that I don't know. It's very strange. But
is it somebody's camera phone or is it somebody taking an actual video of this guy? Does it happen to be the best angle? Yeah.
Don't know. That's just the video that we saw. But
also, that guy's scarf was offensive.
The keffiyeh? The keffiyeh that the guy
was
wearing?
Yeah, I think it's offensive to wear the keffiyeh, so I avoid it. But it also was fashionably offensive because it had tassels. And why is he wearing it? And it's just, I don't like it.
That's a tremendous point.
Yeah.
It's a great point.
Thank
the tassels, look, the tassels fantastic. Thing are really
he deserved to get tackled the tassels for just, that.
Wow. I mean, it's a great point.
Here is
I'll pay the kid's legal fees just for tackling him for the keffiyeh. It's a brilliant point.
Let's just play one more sound here. I mean, we could go over the potential cabinet picks at this moment, but it's really unclear. I mean, I think we're just seeing, I just think they just had not planned for this. I mean, they just got rid of their transitional head a week ago. This guy, Elliot Cohen, right? Is that his name?
Elliot Cohen, yeah.
Elliot Cohen.
He transitioned for the whole team or foreign policy specifically?
Well, Elliot Cohen, I don't know that he was even part of the transition team, but he was brought in. He was a Bush a GW, I think State Department or Defense Department guy, maybe under Condi Rice. So maybe he was a national security advisor. And, fairly neoconish guy. They brought him in. He was all over Twitter today saying, like, don't go in there. They're all a-holes. And then you see like a guy named John Bolton you see John Bolton floated. John Bolton is about as neocon as you can get. And of course, Donald Trump was supposedly against the Iraq war. We know he wasn't, but is it possible he wasn't aware that John Bolton was everything the Iraq war or represents everything that the Iraq war was?
Wow, John Bolton, a little crazy.
But again, you don't know if that's not just people floating a name out there. And not even transition, right? I mean, it's just like it's probably Bolton's people.
Totally.
And maybe it's and we don't know if Jeff Sessions, who wants to be the attorney general, is not out there floating Rudy Giuliani's name for Secretary of State because he wants that to catch on. I mean, this is how that game is played, particularly when there's such a vacuum. A vacuum of philosophy, a vacuum of operational knowledge, a vacuum of actual people working on this stuff, right? Like Pence took it over from Christie. I don't know if it was because, you know, I don't know if to believe the story that Donald Trump was so offended by Bridgegate. Which is a weird time to be offended by that. Or if it was
Kushner
was like...
I think this is the time where Kushner was like, okay, now we can roll Christie out of here. He put my dad in jail. F him.
Right.
That's it, I think.
Maybe it was also, you know, the argument of like, this guy's not on the inside. Who knows? Who knows what it was? So, you know, we can go over these names, and maybe we'll talk to David Dayan, who is working a beat at The Nation now following this stuff. Meanwhile, one of the elements of the, and you know, look, in terms of coming up with the reason why Hillary Clinton lost, I don't think there was a reason. I think there were multiple reasons. And as I've sort of sifted through the different narratives coming out of it, we still need to see more data. But the one reason I think that you can attribute to the Clinton campaign, right? Like there's no way to control Comey's letter. And I think that probably had some impact. I don't know how you measure it. And just everything else, frankly. The one thing they could have controlled was the campaign they ran. And it's very hard sitting in one place, seeing sort of the broader outlines of the campaign. But one thing that was clear that we were saying contemporaneously is that, one, they're not making an argument based on any policy whatsoever. Two, the primary messaging from the campaign is that Donald Trump is just a horrible human being and shouldn't be president. Three, they were actively seeking out Republican crossover support, which turned out to be a total disaster because there's a huge opportunity cost there that they just simply assumed was not there, which is that every time you're reaching out to one of these Paul Ryan reasonable Republican types, you're either A, alienating some of your base, or B, not spending time or money or effort on going and getting your base. And then I think there's just like some old-fashioned consultants are horrible human being stuff. You know, you look at like the media markets in which they spent their money. L.A. got more messaging than Milwaukee. Why are you spending money in L.A.? Because you want to run up the vote. Or also, if you're a media buyer, you get a much higher commission because the cost for every minute in LA is far greater than it is in Milwaukee. You know, why are you dumping money into states you're not going to win? Because they wanted to run up the tallies. It was just poor execution on the campaign. I mean, we're talking about a couple hundred thousand votes. Get you Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. But, you know, I don't know the value of litigating that much anymore. I mean, I think you wait and see what the rest of the data is, but the real fight is going to be as to, like, you know, what leadership is emerging going forward and what people are going to do. Here's Obama saying that Democrats need to show up everywhere at a grassroots level. But the bottom line is you got to provide at least a proactive agenda, something that is aspirational and cohesive. There needs to be a nationalization of the election. And this election, this on-year election, was run as if it was an off-year election by Democrats. And they do the off-year elections wrong, too. You need a cohesive message so that everybody can run on that message down the ticket. And certainly, if you're a senator running for re-election, you can't argue that you're running because Donald Trump's a monster. That's not a winning strategy for you. It may be true that Donald Trump is a monster, but it's just not going to necessarily motivate people. Here's Obama, who, you know, I mean, this guy's legacy, like, we talk about day one. They're already working on every regulation passed in 2016, or I should say executive action regulation increase. And then they're just going to dismember any bit of the Obama presidency, net neutrality. I mean, the list goes on. EPA regulations, DACA, DAPA. Here he is.
So there are going to be a core set of values that shouldn't be up for debate, should be our North Star. But how we organize politically, I think, is something that we should spend some time thinking about. I believe that we have better ideas. But I also believe that good ideas don't matter if people don't hear them. And one of the issues the Democrats have to be clear on is that given population distribution across the country, we have to compete everywhere. We have to show up everywhere. We have to work at a grassroots level, something that's been a running thread in my career. You know, I won Iowa not because the demographics dictated that I would win Iowa. It was because I spent 87 days going to every small town and fair and fish fry and VFW hall. And there were some counties where I might have lost, but maybe I lost by 20 points instead of 50 points. There's some counties maybe I won that people didn't expect because people had a chance to see you and listen to you and get a sense of who you stood for and who you were fighting for. And the challenge for a national party is how do you dig in there and create those kinds of structures so that people have a sense of what it is that you stand for.
Yeah. and as opposed to people projecting upon you what you stand for.
Here's Pharrell as a campaign strategy.
What was it?
I was joking with somebody how the last week of the campaign was like, I have no message on the economy, ladies and gentlemen. Here's Pharrell.
Pharrell?
Here's Beyonce.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, all right. He just doesn't know who Pharrell is. I'm sorry. Beyonce. I know who Beyonce is.
Beyonce. I've definitely heard of her.
I think you would like Solange better, which is a good thing.
Nonetheless, there's Obama. I don't know if you could call that a dig.
Dig-ish.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll take some phone calls, 646-257-3920. IMs will be on. Take a quick break.
I'm black. I have a friggin' Muslim name, Hillary. I beat friggin' war veteran and a white man business guy.
Well, look, let's be clear here. Donald Trump underperformed Romney and McCain numbers. Now,
significantly,
it is true that this was about, there was a difference in the way that these votes were dispersed. Mitt Romney did better in California than Donald Trump. But Donald Trump did better in Pennsylvania. And that's obviously more important. And there was definitely some crossover, some Obama voters who voted for Trump. But I think there was also a lot of Democratic votes that were just simply left on the table because there was some sense that they'll come out just because Donald Trump is bad. And there was no programmatic pitch to them. And, you know, and I think part of it was they were trying to fashion the type of win that they got. They wanted a coalition that would help them make a deal with Paul Ryan. They wanted to fashion the win around what their policy agenda was in the spring of 2017. Now, broadly speaking, there's nothing wrong with that. Generically speaking, there's nothing wrong with that, right? You want a win that is going to help you. But the problem is that when you structure the win so that you can make a deal to lower corporate taxes, there's no constituency for that. There's no constituency for that in this country. I mean, Donald Trump may end up doing it, but that was not his primary pitch. That was not where he was looking for votes. And I hope also, like, that there, you know, it's almost as if, like, she made the mistake Obama did, but Obama waited till he got into office to make that mistake.
Right. That's exactly right.
She thought that she was going to be able to reach across the aisle, make this deal, and wanted to make sure that there was, that the win reflected that. I honestly believe that's what it is. I mean, I haven't seen anybody sort of make that argument, but it seems to me, like, I don't know how these two facts don't play into it. They did not go after Paul Ryan. They openly had a strategy of going after suburban Republican voters. And Chuck Schumer, these are 3 points, was bragging as early as late September, early October, that he had already basically fashioned the deal for tax repatriation. You know, those three things. And if you run a campaign to achieve those three things, you're ignoring the people who didn't come out to vote. And that's it. I mean, everything else you can't control. That's true. But in terms of what you can control. All right. 646-257-3920. Folks, don't forget, it's your membership that makes this show possible. We can't do it without you. We're, you know, in the a slow readjusting to the new reality that we're in and attempting to figure out, like, what is the best show that we can do in this context. We're still going to try and talk about broader policy ideas and visions of what the country can be. It's not going to have the same salience or relevance, at least in the short term. And then the other really important, I mean, obviously we're going to be talking about activism and organizing and being very strategic in how, you know, we sort of like mitigate the damage. And I think also people have to be very, very vigilant in, because we are, it seems to me, you know, one terrorist attack away from something that's even just sort of, you know, remember this time what the Bush administration did and what was codified in some respects by the Obama administration, that's the baseline now. That's the baseline. So, all right, folks, let's head to the fun half. Jeez, oh, Pete. The number 646-257-3920. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% back or 10% off. That's what I'm saying. Majority Report, kickback.com. Check out our Amazon and Jet.com links. Go to majorityreportkickback.com, click on the link, bookmark it, buy your stuff through there. We get a kickback. You notice no difference. You know the whole deal. Hang in there. Fun half coming up. Be right back.